17,556 people have been killed by guns in America so far this year, and there have been 216 mass shootings, including in Buffalo and Uvalde. That's according to the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive. And following these tragedies come calls for new gun safety laws, but Washington has a long history of failed attempts at such legislation.
Nearly 25 years ago, in what was at the time the deadliest school shooting in U.S. history, 15 people died, 24 were injured at Columbine High School.
The heart and soul of America is on the line.
Lawmakers introduced the Youth Gun Crime Enforcement Act only 3 weeks after the shooting. The goal was to put in place a mandatory waiting period, background checks, and more gun restrictions for people under the age of 18. That bill failed, along with federal legislation to close the so-called gun show loophole, which allows unlicensed dealers to sell guns without background checks. Less than 5 years later, the federal ban on semi-automatic weapons like AR-15s expired. But both chambers of Congress and the White House at the time were controlled by Republicans, and lawmakers never brought the ban up for a renewal. In 2012, the country was shaken by the massacre in Newtown. A gunman at Sandy Hook Elementary killed 26 people. 20 of them were just 6 and 7-year-olds. Congressional Democrats drafted bills to expand background checks, and talks stretched on for months, but no deal. 3 years later, in Charleston, South Carolina, a white gunman shot and killed 9 black people attending a church Bible study. Democrats proposed closing the so-called Charleston loophole, which allows dealers to complete gun sales if a criminal background check takes longer than 3 business days. But Republicans controlled both chambers of Congress at the time, and the legislation went nowhere. In 2016, a gunman killed 49 people at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. The Senate was deadlocked just 8 days after the shooting on measures to block people on the federal terrorism watch list from buying guns and to close loopholes in background check laws. In the following year, in October 2017, 60 people were killed by a lone gunman shooting from the 32nd floor of a high-rise in Las Vegas, becoming the deadliest mass shooting in America. The shooter used what's called a bump stock, which allows a semi-automatic rifle to fire hundreds of rounds per minute. After a bipartisan effort to ban the devices stalled in Congress, then-President Trump eventually banned them through executive action. Then on Valentine's Day in 2018, a former student went into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida and killed 17 people, 14 of them students. Senator Marco Rubio introduced a red flag bill that would let law enforcement restrict gun access for people considered unstable, who could be a threat to others or themselves. Rubio's bill was reintroduced twice in the Senate, but never got a vote on the floor. And now, as the country witnesses the second deadliest school shooting in American history, and with polls showing the overwhelming majority of Americans supporting some restrictions on firearms, the question is it going to be different this time?
To help answer that question, we have with us national political reporter Heidi Prisbola, who has for years covered the gun reform debate on Capitol Hill and across the country. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeff.
And one of the things that's different about this current moment is that the Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, this past week said that he encouraged Texas Senator John Cornyn to work with Democrats on hashing out some compromise bill. What are we to make of that?
And that is the reason why you see Senator Joe Manchin, who is a battle-hardened veteran of these debates, say that he is optimistic. McConnell is definitely feeling the pressure, as he always does, in the aftermath of these gun massacres. And the true test of this is what happens over the next few days, whether that continues, whether the pressure continues and he feels it politically, or whether it dissipates. Because in the end, Jeff, this is going to be a political calculation by Mitch McConnell about whether it hurts or helps his flock in order to pass this legislation. At the same time, it's important to set expectations here, because what we are talking about here is whether there will be very, very modest reforms in answer to what is really the deadliest school massacre in 10 years.
To your point, and this is sort of based on my own reporting too, Democrats and Republicans, it's still early, but they're not talking about an assault weapons ban. They're talking about potentially red flag laws and increasing background checks, right?
So those are the two modest reforms that could come of this, right? We saw the gun background check legislation implode in spectacular fashion after Newtown, and it really hasn't gone anywhere since then. look at that. Those are small things. Those are closing the so-called gun show loophole, which is that you can get guns without background checks at some gun shows, as well as over the internet. That's number one. Number two are these red flag laws that already exist in about 19 states. That is simply allowing states, giving states some grant money to help them to bring in and apprehend individuals who might pose a threat to themselves or to other people. It would allow family members or law enforcement to get court orders to get the guns away from those individuals.
As you know, momentum accounts for a lot in politics. You talked about the passage of time. The Senate is on a pre-scheduled 10-day break. They're not back in town until June 6th. I mean, that could really undo a potential deal like this.
And that's why it is very instructive to see what the ecosystem around this does, because, and you and I discussed this previously, Jeff, that what we've seen in the 10 years since Newtown is that there's this whole new advocacy network, like Moms Demand Action, Sandy Hook Promise, the Parkland Kids. They claim to have even more financial backing and be more powerful than the NRA, which, let's face it, is facing some very serious problems right now financially in terms of corruption. And so does that pressure remain? There will be marches on June 11th, or does the media ecosphere that all of these members, these 10 Republicans who they're going to need, so devoid of that and so separate from that, that the pressure dissipates on them? Because again, that's what we're talking about here, are 10 Republicans.
You mentioned the NRA. That organization is nowhere near the powerhouse that it once was. It's not even the powerhouse that some Democrats claim that it is, and yet you have so many Republicans who still echo NRA talking points. What accounts for that? What accounts for their pull on the Republican Party?
Well, some of it is overstated when you look at the financial impact, because the NRA spreads its money so thinly across so many members that you really can't make the argument this is about finances, rather more about culture, culture in this country. If you look at where some of the biggest divides are, Jeff, it's not red and blue. It's not different socioeconomics. It is actually gun-owning households and non-gun-owning households. And so a lot of it is just the cultural, but it's also this misplaced notion that it is political suicide to do anything on guns, which is really a myth that's been propagated since the Clinton era when the assault weapons ban expired and they were just too afraid to do anything about it because they had lost the midterm elections.
Heidi Prisbola, thanks so much for putting this all into context for us. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.